Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
This segment of the show is brought to you by Delta Business Services, and our guest is Ken Boyd, who's joining us from the St. Louis Test Prep Company in St. Louis, Missouri. And Ken's company, St. Louis Test Prep, provides training in accounting and finance to students and investors. He's the author of 3 dummies books on accounting. I don't think that's the 3 dummies on accounting. I think it's 3 dummies books on accounting. So we're going to hear about that. And we're going to talk about the 5 areas of investing that are misunderstood. Ken, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, Ken. Thanks for joining us. And, you know, one of the things we like to do to start off our interview is let our listeners know a little bit about our guests. Can you share a little bit about your background and how you got into this particular line of work?
Sure. I've really had 3 components to my career. Started off right out of college, I spent 4 years as a financial advisor. My dad, who's now 82, is still an advisor. He's been at it for 55 years. So we worked together for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I then went on and passed the CPA exam, and I spent many years working as a CPA, so that was sort of segment number 2. And about 15 years ago, I shifted into education and training. My first experience of that was teaching the test prep for what is now Becker, for people who are getting licensed through FINRA to be investment brokers, the Series 7 exam. I taught that in St. Louis. That's what got me started, which has led to where I am now. And I spend most of my time writing books and articles about business, and I do some speaking and film video training. So that's sort of my background.
Great background. It sounds like it's been interesting and kept you hopping over the years. And, you know, with all of that you've written and all the research that you've done, I'm sure you must have talked to a lot of business owners, looked at a lot of issues. Ken, what's the number one accounting issue for small business owners?
You know, I keep seeing the same pattern repeat over and over, and that is that understanding cash flow is just as important as generating a profit, and maybe more so. And I say that because I've seen many businesses that are profitable but can't generate cash fast enough to operate each month. And what these companies end up doing is they have to sell themselves either all or part of the business just to get enough cash to operate, even though they were profitable. It's the number one problem I see in business.
So they're kind of mortgaging their future to take care of issues today that maybe if they understood it a little bit better, they could explore some other alternatives and work their way out of it?
Exactly. And that there are some specifics that relate to that. You need to project your cash flow at least for a year. You might consider discounting invoices to get clients to pay you a little sooner. And another big one is when you have a major purchase, particularly if you buy inventory as a retailer, if you can finance that inventory so you don't have to pay it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Many companies just don't plan, they don't consider those alternatives.
That's the biggest thing that you see out there where it drives people, out of business. They grow too fast, or they're focused on sales but not profitable sales and collections and getting the money in soon enough. Do they also tend to pay a little too soon?
Yeah, they pay a little too soon. They, there's sort of a knee-jerk reaction that you pull out your invoices and you look at your payables on your system and you just start writing checks when maybe you should be thinking through the process of, well, particularly for my big invoices, when should I really pay that bill? How late can I pay it without hurting my relationship with my vendor?
So some people would say, well, that's kind of not fair because I'm trying to get paid as soon as possible and then I'm trying to pay out as late as possible. But that's the game of cash flow, isn't it?
That's exactly right. And another way to sort of alleviate this pain, to sort of get rid of it, is to make sure that you have a line of credit to smooth over these situations when you do run short of cash. But even if you have a line of credit, you've got to keep in mind that if you decide to pay all those invoices on time or early, you're going to incur an interest cost on accessing the line of credit. So there is a cost if you choose to take a line of credit and pay sooner than later.
And that's a good point. I was going to ask you, so do most business owners have a good understanding of what all their opportunity and lending costs are and how they interrelate with each other?
Really, the variable I see is it completely depends on the relationship they have with a commercial banker and how that business owner interacts with his personal banker and how much he's willing to trust him, because a really good commercial banker will explain those options and sort of pull that business owner away from running the business day-to-day and having the blinders on and pull them back and say, here are your choices in terms of finance. So I've seen a lot of situations where the good cash management works because they have a good commercial banker.
Do most small business owners that you've seen out there have good pricing? In other words, do they understand why their prices are what they are and how they were built and what the margins are on their different offerings?
You know, most don't. And in fact, that's a big cost accounting issue in any cost accounting textbook. And you can either do sort of bottom up or top down. And by that I mean, top down means my competition forces me to charge $70 for a baseball glove, and therefore I can't charge more than $70. And to make a profit margin, I have to get my expenses down and try to come up with a profit margin selling a baseball glove at $70. The opposite side, bottom up, says, well, if I'm buying leather and string and other items to make a baseball glove, I'm going to add up my costs at a profit margin on top that's decent, and that's what I sell my glove for. Most business owners I see start with a top down, assuming that they can't charge a price that's higher than their competition. As a friend of mine says, the pricing needs to be a conversation about value and not a conversation about competing with other people. You need to sort of explain the value for charging more for your baseball glove, in my example.
That's very clear. One of the best descriptions I've heard, so I can see why you've written some books. So when you're describing all of these things, these accounting topics, Ken, what were some of the most difficult to explain?
You know, it's funny. I was taking notes before we came on the air. One of the most difficult is premiums and discounts on bonds. Always has been. It's a topic that comes up in intermediate accounting classes. I was fortunate in that my dad and I worked in a business where we sold almost exclusively nonprofit hospital bonds. We had worked for a company that underwrote and sold them. So we explained premiums and discounts all day long. That's a tough topic for accounting professors to explain if they've never been in the business, particularly the question of why would I ever buy a bond for a premium? And the answer to that question is, well, the interest rate you're earning on that bond is higher than the current market. And if you look at your total return, which is your interest flow, and plus or minus the price of the bond, you're going to end up, you know, in the same place or better off. That's the toughest term to explain in accounting.
It's very counterintuitive for a lot of people that things
yes.
like the bond market and the stock market move in inverse directions, and, you know, interest rates going up is bad for the holding value of a bond and all that kind of stuff. It's very difficult. You're right. It's hard to explain to people. But when they really, I'm sure, and I'm going to read your books, but when it boils right down to it, it does make sense that if you're holding something with a lower coupon rate, a lower interest rate, it's going to be unattractive in the future as interest rates go up and new issues come out. So it really boils down to, are you going to hold it or are you going to someday dump it, because you're going to pay the price at that point, right?
Right, and it actually relates to bond investing as well. And what I tell people is, because of all the confusion on bond funds, which you touched on, if you're going to buy a portfolio of bonds and hold it till maturity, and those bonds are of good quality, say AA or higher, well, you've got some certainty there. If you assume you hold it till maturity, you're going to be a lot less concerned about interest rates changing and your bond price changing. The challenge with that is that when brokerage companies send out statements and they value those bonds on a statement, people see that the bond is worth less, but if you're holding it till maturity, it's not as big an issue. That's a very tough thing, I think, for brokers and financial advisors to explain.
Now, at that point, you're really after the income or the yield on
right.
that bond. And your big risk is that the institution that issued the bond might call it because it got too good to be
right.
true, right? And then you're stuck. Or else you might have to cash out early, and it might not fetch you what you paid in the first place, right?
Yeah, exactly. Call features... you know, I started in the business in 85, and we've had, as you know very well, a declining interest rate market since then. And because of that, we had lots of bonds that were getting called away. So call feature is a big issue. And, of course, the solution to that is if you can ladder the maturities where you can buy bonds with different maturities, so you're always reinvesting, that can help alleviate some of the uncertainty, too.
That's a great idea. So is this the most confusing area of investing? Is this premiums and discounts on bonds? Because there's a lot of confusion out there these days with is the market reasonably priced? What are all these index things going on that are kind of ways to protect against down markets, and are they efficient? There's a ton of stuff, information out there that investors are confused about. So what are the big ones that you see?
I'll touch on two that are tax related. The first one, and I put this in the book and I included what I speak, is a realized versus a recognized gain. Okay? So in two steps. You got to have a buy and a sell to have a realized gain. If I buy IBM at $40 a share and I sell it at $60, I have a realized gain. Until you have a sell, you have an unrealized gain. But depending on what vehicle you're investing in, for example, an annuity or a tax-deferred investment like a 401k, that realized gain, that $20 gain in my example, is not recognized for taxes. It's deferred. So I see big confusion between realized and recognized gains.
Yeah, it's very confusing, and there's a huge number of tax-deferred vehicles out there, especially IRA accounts and 401ks, mm-hmm. and all these types of things. And people look at those and go, well, I don't feel confident about the future, or maybe I've just gone from feeling aggressive to feeling conservative. And in those types of structures, of course, you can oftentimes change your mix, change your portfolio without triggering any taxes, which gives you a real leg up on an unprotected type of asset, where you really have to ask the question, what's the tax impact going to be if I sell off and move my assets if, say, you're in a non-IRA type of an environment or non-deferred environment, right?
Right, exactly. And that relates to another big area of confusion. And in fact, I heard another guest talking about it on your show, which is, and the focus of your practice, which is taking money out can be almost as important to understand as putting money into investments. We have required minimum distribution rules, which are really, really complex. They're getting more complex all the time. But generally, you may have to take money, all of your money, out of an investment that's been accruing on a tax-deferred basis over 6 or 7 years, and that window make it shorter. And the impact to an investor who's still working, I had this case with an old tax client of mine who was in his 70s and still working full-time. He was paying on the earnings that had accumulated over the years, he was getting a big chunk of it returned to him based on the tax code, and he was paying a very high income tax rate on those earnings because he was still working and was in the top bracket. So as trillions of dollars come out over the next few years, that required minimum distribution is a huge issue.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about that, because, of course, most of our listeners are over age 50, and they're going to get to the point where they're going to start a distribution event from something. So how do you do that? Do you just you build a grid and say, okay, let's say your IRA account's going to be required to come out starting at age 70 and a half, so unless you need that earlier, you're going to leave that one alone. Is deferral always the best option if you don't need the income? Is there a velocity there? Or you know, I guess the question is, where should people go? Some people will say, well, I'm just going to take a little bit from all of my accounts every year. Is that the best strategy?
I think, and you touched on it, I think the best strategy is to first, which investment buckets, I always use buckets, which investment buckets am I going to be forced to take money out of at 59 and a half or 62 or whatever? And have a financial advisor map this out on a timeline. So I have to take the money out of buckets A and B first. So I'll live on that income. To the extent that I can, I'm going to delay taking money out of buckets C and D and E on down the road until I need the income, because those are growing on a tax-deferred basis. It compounds faster, and the longer I can put off the taxes, the better. I'll tell you another source of confusion. It's always been the the line that try to take these distributions when you're retired and you're earning less. However, many high net worth people who are retired have multiple sources of income, and when you look at their tax return, they're actually still in a pretty high bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though they're not working, they have lots of income coming into the tax return. So that also has to be a consideration.
To me, it's kind of like a bathroom full of faucets.
That's a perfect analogy.
And you need to know, which ones am I going to turn on when? Which one should I turn on first? And which one should I leave alone until the very end? And that's complicated, because a lot of times the impact, you know, what we're trying to do, right, is to fine-tune all of this so that when you're 90, you didn't make a mistake when you were 65 years old or 70, and now you've it's really the efficiency of minimizing the leaks in these buckets you talk about, which are taxes and which are unnecessary distributions that get spent. There's really a lot of discipline that goes into income planning in retirement. So it takes some work and some study. There's good technology out there to help advisors and planners map these things out there, though, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. And lots of good tools, some of which people can sort of explore on their own and then go to a financial advisor and, you know, say, I've educated myself this far, can you get me the rest of the way there? One other thing I'll mention on planning, taking money out, particularly with annuities, there are situations where you can, and it's complex from a tax and legal standpoint, where you can roll that investment into something else that can go on to the next generation. That's sort of beyond my pay grade, but there are some vehicles where you might be able to take something and push it down the road even farther to the next generation.
There are tons of strategies, and I'm sure there'll be more emerging. And listeners, just be careful that you don't just jump into something without talking with your tax and legal advisors and your financial planners, because they'll help protect you against some of the scams that are out there. You know, there are always going to be things on the bleeding edge out there when it comes to deferring taxes, because it's such a hot topic. Hey, Ken, tell our listeners how they can get in touch and learn more about you and what you do and your books.
The best way to find me is if you go to my website, which is STL, like St. Louis, STL and the word test, all one word, STLtest.net. What I've done as a service to people is I have about 350 videos on YouTube, and they're all grouped together on my website by type. So you can go to my website, find that. I have high-resolution pictures and links to all three dummies books. I'm starting a fourth dummies book this fall, and that's probably the best way to find me.
What a great resource for our listeners and for, you know, people out there in general to learn about some of these topics so that you can have a better conversation with your advisors, with your accountants, with people that you talk to who advise you. Go take a little, you know, take some of these courses and learn about some of these things. And especially if you're a business owner, I think the first part we talked about, the velocity of your cash flow and understanding how you can improve your cash flow management and learn from somebody who's writes it and communicates it so clearly and so simply that you'll understand it and walk away with some immediate knowledge. Ken, I really want to thank you for joining us. I'd love to continue on, but we got to move on today, but I want to have you come back and talk more about some of these topics, because I think we can dig a lot deeper into some of these areas.
Bill, great for having me. I'd be happy to come back anytime.
Real pleasure. I've been talking with Ken Boyd of St. Louis Test Prep. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to have one of our revered all-star reviews featuring 10 of our best guests in just a moment.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing over 250 top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.